Chapter 14. The Goliath Apologarium. Danish car a death trap, claims Kenyan minister. Article in The Toad on Sunday, July 16, 1988. Robert Edsel, the Kenyan Minister of Road Safety, hit out at Danish car manufacturer Volvo yesterday, claiming the boxy and unsightly vehicle, previously considered one of the safest cars on the market, to be the complete reverse, a death trap for anyone stupid enough to buy one. The Volvo fared very poorly in the rocket-propelled grenade test, claimed Mr. Edsel in a press release yesterday. And owners and their children risk permanent spinal injury when dropped in the car from heights as low as 60 feet. Mr. Edsel continued to pour scorn on the pride of the Danish motoring industry by revealing that the Volvo's air filters offered scant protection against pyroclastic flows, poisonous fumes, and other forms of common volcanic phenomena. I would very much recommend that anyone thinking of buying this poor Danish product should think again, said Mr. Edsel. When the Danish foreign minister pointed out that Volvos were, in fact, Swedish, Mr. Edsel accused the Danes of once again attempting to blame their neighbours for their own manufacturing weaknesses. The Isle of Man had been an independent corporate state within England since it was appropriated for the greater fiscal good in 1963. The surrounding Irish Sea was heavily mined to deter unwanted visitors, and the skies above protected by the most technologically advanced anti-aircraft system known to man. It had hospitals and schools, a university, its own fusion reactor, and also, leading from Douglas to the Kennedy Graviport in New York, the world's only privately run gravitube. The Isle of Man was home to almost 200,000 people who did nothing but support, or support the support, of the one enterprise that dominated the small island, the Goliath Corporation. The old Manx town of Laxey was renamed Goliathopolis and was now the Hong Kong of the British archipelago, a forest of glassy towers striding up the hillside towards Snae Fell. The largest of these skyscrapers rose higher even than the mountain peak behind and could be seen glinting in the sunlight all the way from Blackpool, weather permitting. In this building was housed the inner sanctum of the whole vast multinational, the cream of Goliath's corporate engineers. An employee could spend a lifetime on the island and never even get past the front desk. And it was on the ground floor of this building, right at the heart of the corporation, that I found the Goliath Apologarium. I joined a small queue in front of a modern glass-topped table where two happy, smiling Goliath employees were giving out questionnaires and numbered tickets. "Hello," said the clerk, a youngish girl with a lopsided smile. "Welcome to the Goliath Corporation's Apology Emporium. Sorry you had to wait. How can we help you?" "The Goliath Corporation murdered my husband."
"How simply dreadful," she responded in a lame and insincere display of sympathy.
"I'm so sorry to hear that. Goliath, as part of our move to a faith-based corporate management system, is committed to reversing all the unpleasant matters we might have previously been engaged in. You need to fill in this form, and Section D of this one, and then take a seat. We'll get one of our highly trained apologists to see you just as soon as they can." She handed me several long forms and a numbered ticket, then indicated a door to one side. I opened the door of the apologarium and walked in. It was a large hall with floor-to-ceiling windows that gave a serene view of the Irish Sea. On one side was a row of perhaps 20 cubicles containing suited apologists, all listening intently to what they were being told, with the same sad and contrite expression. On the other side were rows upon rows of wooden seating that held eager and once bullied citizens, anxiously clasping their numbered tickets and patiently waiting their turn. I looked at my ticket. It was number 6,174. I glanced up at the board, which told me that number 836 was now being interviewed.
"Dear sweet people," said a voice through a tannoy, "Goliath is deeply sorry for all the harm it might inadvertently have caused you in the past. Here at the Goliath Apologarium, we are only too happy to assist in your problem, no matter how small."
"You,"
I said to a man who was hobbling past me towards the exit. "Has Goliath repented to your satisfaction?"
"Well, they didn't really need to," he replied blandly. "It was I who was at fault. In fact, I apologized for wasting their valuable time."
"What did they do?"
"They bathed my neighborhood with ionizing radiation, then denied it for 17 years, even after people's teeth fell out and I grew a third foot."
"And you forgave them?"
"Of course. I can see now that it was a genuine accident, and the public has to accept equal risks if we are to have abundant clean energy, limitless food, and household electrode fragmentizers." He was carrying a sheaf of papers, not the application form that I had had to fill out, but leaflets on how to join New Goliath. Not as a consumer, but as a worshipper. I had always been deeply distrustful of Goliath, but this whole repentance thing smelt worse than anything I had so far witnessed. I turned, tore up my numbered ticket, and headed for the exit.
"Miss Next!" called out a familiar voice. "I say, Miss Next!"
A short man with pinched features and a rounded head covered with the fuzz of an aggressively short crew cut was facing me. He was wearing a dark suit and heavy gold jewelry, and was arguably the person I liked least. This was Jack Shit, once Goliath's top advanced weapons guru and ex-convict of the Raven. This was the man who had tried to prolong the Crimean War so he could make a fortune out of Goliath's latest superweapon, the plasma rifle. Anger rose quickly within me. I turned Friday in the other direction so as not to give his young mind any wrong ideas about the use of violence, and then grasped Shit by the throat. He took a step back, stumbled, and collapsed beneath me with a yelp. Sensing I had been in this position before, I released him and placed my hand on the butt of my automatic, expecting to be attacked by a host of Jack's minders. But there was nothing. Just sad citizens looking on sorrowfully.
"There is no one here to help me," said Jack Shit,
slowly getting to his feet.
"I have been assaulted 8 times today. I count myself fortunate. Yesterday it was 23.
I looked at him and noticed for the first time that he had a black eye and a cut on his lip. "No minders?" I echoed. "Why?"
"It is my absolution to face those I have bullied and harangued in the past, Miss Next. When we last met, I was head of Goliath's Advanced Weapons Division and corporate ladder number 329.
He sighed.
"Now, thanks to your well-publicized denouncement of the failings of our plasma rifle, the corporation decided to demote me. I am an apology facilitation operative second class, ladder number 12,398,219. The mighty has fallen, Miss Next."
"On the contrary," I replied, "you have merely been moved to a level more fitting for your competence. It's a shame. You deserved much worse than this." His eyes twitched as he grew angry. The old Jack, the homicidal one, returned for a moment. But the feelings were short-lived, and his shoulders fell as he realized that without the Goliath Security Service to back him up, his power over me was minimal.
"Maybe you're right," he said simply. "You will not have to wait your turn, Miss Next. I will deal with your case personally. Is this your son?"
He bent down to look closer.
"Cute fellow, isn't he?"
"Iusamod tempor incidunt adipisicing elite," said Friday, glaring at Jack suspiciously.
"What did he say?"
"He said, 'If you touch me, my mum will break your nose.'"
Jack stood up quickly.
"I see. Goliath and myself offer a full, frank, and unreserved apology."
"What for?"
"I don't know. Have it on account. Would you care to come to my office?"
He beckoned me out the door, and we crossed a courtyard with a large fountain in the middle, past a few suited Goliath officials chattering in a corner, then through another doorway and down a wide corridor full of clerks moving backwards and forwards with folders tucked under their arms. Jack opened a door, ushered me in, offered me a chair, and then sat himself. It was a miserable little office, devoid of any decoration except a shabby Lola Vavoom calendar on the wall and a dead plant in a pot. The only window looked out onto a wall. He arranged some papers on his desk and spoke into the intercom.
"Mr. Higgs, Would you bring the Thursday next file in, please?
He looked at me earnestly and set his head at a slight angle, as though trying to affect some sort of apologetic demeanour.
None of us quite realised, he began, in the sort of soft voice that undertakers use when attempting to persuade you to buy the deluxe coffin, just how appalling we had been until we started asking people if they were at all unhappy with our conduct.
Why don't we cut the cr... I looked at Friday, who looked back at me.
Cut the
nonsense and go straight to the place where you atone for your crimes.
He sighed and stared at me for a moment and then said, Very well. What did we do wrong again?
You can't remember.
I do lots of wrong things, Miss Next. You'll excuse me if I can't remember details.
You eradicated my husband, I said through gritted teeth.
Of course. And what was the name of the eradicatee?
Landon, I replied coldly. Landon Park Lane.
At that moment, a clerk arrived with a pile of papers and laid them on his desk. Jack opened the file, which was marked Most Secret, and leafed through them.
The records show that at the same time you say your husband was eradicated, your case officer was Operative Shit-Hawes. It says here that he pressured you to release Operative Shit, that's me, from within the pages of The Raven, by utilising an unnamed ChronoGuard operative who volunteered his services. It says that you complied, but our promise was revoked due to an unforeseen and commercially necessary overriding blackmail continuance situation.
You mean corporate greed, don't you?
Don't underestimate greed, Miss Next. It's commerce's greatest motivating force. In this context, it was probably due to our plans to use the book world to dump nuclear waste and sell our extremely high-quality goods and services to characters in fiction. You were then imprisoned in our most inaccessible vault, from where you escaped, methodology unknown.
He closed the file.
What this means, Miss Next, is that we kidnapped you, tried to kill you, and then had you on our shoot-on-sight list for over a year. You may be in line for a generous cash settlement.
I don't want cash, Jack. You had someone go back in time to kill Landon. Now you can just get someone to go back again and unkill him.
Jack Shit paused and drummed his fingers on the table for a moment.
That's not how it works, replied Shit testily. The apology and restitution rules are very clear. For us to repent, we must agree as to what we have done wrong, and there's no mention of any Goliath-led, illegal time-related jiggery-pokery in our report. Since Goliath's records are time-audited on a regular basis, I think that proves conclusively that if there was any time-foolery, it was instigated by the ChronoGuard. Goliath's chronological record is above reproach.
I thumped the table with my fist and Jack jumped. Without his henchmen around him, he was a coward, and every time he flinched, I grew stronger.
This is complete and utter sh...
I looked at Friday again.
Rubbish, Jack. Goliath and the ChronoGuard eradicated my husband. You had the power to remove him. You can be the ones that put him back. That's not possible. Give me back my husband.
The anger in Jack returned. He also rose and pointed an accusing finger at me.
Have you even the slightest idea how much it costs to bribe the ChronoGuard? More money than we care to spend on the sort of miserable, half-hearted forgiveness you can offer us. And another thing, I... Excuse me.
The phone had rung, and he picked it up, his eyes flicking instantly to me as he listened.
Yes, it is. Yes, she is. Yes, we do. Yes, I will.
His eyes opened wide and he stood up.
This is indeed an honour, sir. No, that would not be a problem at all, sir. Yes, I'm sure I can persuade her about that, sir. No, it's what we all want. And a very good day to you, sir. Thank you.
He put down the phone and fetched an empty cardboard box from the cupboard, with a renewed spring in his step.
Good news,
he exclaimed, taking some junk out of his desk and placing it in the box.
The CEO of New Goliath has taken a special interest in your case, and will personally guarantee the return of your husband.
I thought you said that time foolery had nothing to do with you.
Apparently I was misinformed, We would be very happy to re-actualize Libna.
Landon.
Right.
What's the catch? I asked suspiciously.
No catch, replied Jack, picking up his desk nameplate and depositing it in the box along with the calendar. We just want you to forgive us and like us.
Like you?
Yes, or pretend to, anyway. Not so very hard now, is it? Just sign this standard forgiveness release form at the bottom here, and we'll re-actualize your hubby. Simple, isn't it?
I was still suspicious. I don't believe you have any intention of getting Landon back.
All right, then,
said Jack, taking some files out of the filing cabinet and dumping them in his cardboard box.
Don't sign, and you'll never know. As you say, Miss Next, we got rid of him, so we can get him back.
You stiffed me once before, Jack. How do I know you won't do it again? Jack paused in his packing and looked slightly apprehensive.
Are you going to sign?
No. Jack sighed and started to take things back out of the cardboard box and return them to their places.
Well, he muttered, there goes my promotion. But listen, whether you sign or not, you walk out of here a free woman. New Goliath has no argument with you any longer. Besides, what do you have to lose?
All I want, I replied, is to get my husband back. I'm not signing anything. Jack took his nameplate out of the cardboard box and put it back on his desk. The phone rang again.
Yes, sir. No, she won't, sir. I tried that, sir. Very well, sir.
He put the phone down and picked up his nameplate again and hovered it over his box.
That was the CEO. He wants to apologize to you personally. Will you go?
I paused. Seeing the head honcho of Goliath was an almost unprecedented event for a non-Goliath official. If anyone could get Landon back, it was him.
Okay.
Jack smiled, dropped the nameplate in his box, and then hurriedly threw everything else back in.
Well, he said, mustache. I've just been promoted up 3 ladder numbers. Go to the main reception desk, and someone will meet you. Don't forget your standard forgiveness release form. And if you could mention my name, I'd be really grateful.
He handed me my unsigned forms as the door opened, and another Goliath operative walked in, also holding a cardboard box full of possessions. What if I don't get him back, Mr. Shit?
Well, he said, looking at his watch, if you have any grievances about the quality of our contrition, you had better take it up with your appointed Goliath apologist. I don't work here any more.
And he smiled a supercilious smile, put on his hat, and was gone.
Well, said the new apologist, as he walked around the desk and started to arrange his possessions for the new office. Is there anything you'd like us to apologize for?
Your corporation, I muttered.
Fully, frankly, and unreservedly, replied the apologist, in the sincerest of tones.